G'day everyone, welcome again to Conversations. My guest today is, well, he's no stranger to 5AA listeners. He's on regularly and he's a bit of a media hog actually, to be quite honest. But if you want to know anything about your computer, the way it works and this increasingly new age of technology, Richard Pascoe is your man. Richard Pascoe, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. When we first talked about this, I thought you might have run out of guests to have me on, so yes.
It's always interesting listening to you, but we do have a bit of an in-joke that it was a really good get. You must have been so hard to get hold of Richard Pascoe, but you are a bit of a media hound, aren't you?
I'm on a few stations around the country, so I'm on 9 radio stations regularly around the country now, which is great, and I do a few TV spots as well every now and again. Down in Tassie, I'm known probably as the second greatest Port Adelaide supporter behind Koshy as well. We always do. It's funny, in Tassie when we talk, there's a bit of sport at the beginning and then we talk about tech. It's kind of like split now.
So you actually broadcast in Tasmania?
Yes, I'm on 7BU on a Monday morning, which takes in half of Tassie. Then I do 7AD on a Wednesday morning, which takes in the other half of Tasmania.
And that's discussion and people ring in with their tech problems?
No, just a quick tech news. So we always discuss during football season, we discuss the AFL's, the big things about AFL and a lot of Port Adelaide stuff on there. Sorry, Graham. And then, you know, if something controversial happens with the Crows, when we had the thing, I talked about that, gave my opinion on that.
Well, you're a celebrity sporting commentator.
As well. And then we get on to the big tech stories of the week. So it's about a 10-minute spot.
We'll come to that because there's nothing more fascinating than this world of technology at the moment. And it changes so rapidly. And I mean, we just couldn't imagine what it was like. 10 years ago, you couldn't imagine what we can do today, but we'll come to that. I want to know how you got to here. Tell us about your early days. I know you're born on the Lefevre Peninsula. I know you went to Largs Primary and Taparoo High School, but
great, great days.
Well, tell us about Mum and Dad. Mum and Dad, both English?
They were. So, you know, my dad died when I was 2, and he was. My mum told me that first of all, he had leukemia, and he had several heart attacks on there as well. The story changed because my mum had issues. She was an alcoholic. You know, my mum could cheerfully drink a bottle of scotch or a bottle of brandy a day.
Wow.
And she held down a part-time job, but as soon as she got home, she drank.
We'll come to that and the impact that might have had on you, but did you not have a fascination? Did you not have a thirst for knowledge about your dad?
I would ask her questions and it would change. He was a real estate salesman. They met in New Zealand. You know, I've got some photos. He was, I think, 15, 16 years older than my mum at the time. So it was. She never talked much about him, you know, no matter how much I asked.
But didn't you want to know?
But after a while, when you get telling, you know, the story was the same and there was no more fill-in about it, I kind of give up.
You wouldn't have. You never knew him.
No, not at all.
He was English. Do you know what county? Why they came to Australia?
Got no idea. She didn't tell me. Wouldn't come along and, you know, and fill that part in. And you know, I always talked. There was a couple of relatives I talked to on her side of the family when I went to England when I was about 17, and I stayed with them for a few weeks, and they were completely in the dark as well. So it's really? Like I never had, you know, I always say to people, it's like I never had a father.
Well, see, now you're a real candidate for that ABC show, Who Do You Think You Are?, where they go back and trace you.
Exactly, right. Good luck for that.
Well, they do, they
I've
find
got, I've got his birth certificate at home. Yeah. That's one thing I do have of his.
Did he have brothers, sisters?
She wouldn't say.
You never knew your grandparents?
On her side, I did. Yeah. But on his side, I know absolutely nobody.
Richard, there surely is a gaping hole there.
Whether I go to ancestry.com.au and go along and try and fill those spots in. But, you know, as a kid, you give up. Mm. You know, if your mum doesn't want to come along and tell you and, you know, you try and have that discussion with her and you know, no matter how much you'd had to drink, you try and have that discussion with her and it just all goes in one ear and out the other.
Was there a scandal in the family?
I've got no idea. You know, it'd be great if it was, you know, because we like a bit of scandal every now and again.
So, I mean, you're such a bright, happy, gregarious sort of character. Your childhood seems to be...
I am now.
You are now.
Okay. I am now.
So tell us about those. You know, your dad passes when you're two. Did you have brothers and sisters?
No, nobody else.
You're an only child.
Only child. And, you know, my earliest memories, we lived in a shared house off Woolner Road down at Semaphore. That's probably my earliest memories of, you know, my childhood down there as well. And going to Largs Bay Primary, because it was a different time back then. You'd ride your bike around and it was fun. So, you know, I'd go off in the morning, come back at 7 o'clock at night for something to eat when she'd had a few.
I can't imagine Largs Bay Primary is all that different to Glenelg Primary School, except the footy teams you barrack for. But what's your memories of Largs Bay Primary?
It was concrete and bitumen everywhere at the time. No grass at all. If you fell over, you fell over down there and hurt yourself. It wasn't like it is today. You know, for jungle gyms, you'd fall and you'd get up and keep going.
So you would have had heroes. You would have had boyhood heroes. Who were they?
I always liked the movies. So, you know, we go back, you know, in time, you know, strong male character,
Hopalong Cassidy.
It's not that old, Gray. You always remember Saturday afternoons and you would watch that on Saturday afternoons, but, movie stars, back then, you know, John Wayne and things like watching The Guns of Navarone, going to, you know, some of the old theatres were around in Adelaide at the time, which, you know, absolutely loved. I remember, you know, we go back in time, I watched Anzac Day, Bridge on the River Quiet, the old Fair Lady Theatre, you know, down, you know, that was down at the bottom end of Hindley Street.
I get all that. I mean, you're reminding me of some of my childhood heroes as well in that sense. You played a bit of footy, did you not?
For 2 years, I tried to play footy down there as well, yeah. When I was a kid, but I was never pushed to play, you know, as well. So, you know, I was quite tall as a kid. So they used me loosely in the ruck. I don't think I was very good, you know, at the time. But, you know, I always regret, because I've got a great love of AFL and football, I always regret not playing and persevering with it when it was, because I get such enjoyment out of, you know, the couple of times I have been able to play. I played in one membership versus staff at Port Adelaide when I was a member. It's probably one of the great highlights of my life, being able to do that, because I played fullback. You know, we were coached by Mark Williams, you know, for the day. Primus rucked.
Wow.
Against us. And I played against some guy who was in Div 1's, played, you know, full forward for Div 1. And he kicked, I think, he got the first goal easy on me. And I think I had 3 goals he kicked on me for the day.
You're jumping too yes. far ahead. But tell me, you come across as such a smart guy, such a smart, clever, even intuitive sort of guy. But what were your high school years like?
My report card was always, he must try harder, easily distracted, should choose better friends for it. So,
tell us about the friends you did choose.
They were, let's go off and run here and there, and, you know, nothing criminal or anything, anything like that. But it was, I was supposedly mixing with the wrong crowd, because Taparu High School was a rough school back then. You know, really, I mean, we had a kid, Russell, I think his name was. I apologise, Russell, if you ever listen to this. He put a fire extinguisher through the wooden floor one day because he got kicked out.
I think all schools have those issues. It was a typical working class environment, was it not?
Yeah.
What ambitions did you have?
Through school. Had no idea what I was ever going to do.
Really?
Yeah. And I always said, I liked year 12 or matric back then. I liked it so much I went back a second year.
Well, you failed.
I failed miserably the first time. And I always remember that the deputy principal came up on exam day and he goes, why are you even here? So you haven't tried all year. Don't know why you're here.
So was that because your mum didn't appear to care or couldn't care?
It's, you know, if I did my homework or I didn't do my homework, it didn't matter to her. And it was the second year I really knuckled down to work and pass quite easily the second time around. But I always remember, we're going towards the end of the year and it's, what do you want to do? You've got to choose something, Richard, when you leave. And I said, I've really got no idea what I want to do. And I went, you know, I'd like to be in the media and journalism. And he said, you'll never make it.
What year was that?
Going back to 1970. 78.
So you never make it.
Never make it.
We need to take a break. I want to come back and talk about those influences, both negative and positive, and in terms of motivating young people to achieve. Richard Pascoe, Adelaide's tech guy, is my guest, folks. Yeah, no stranger to the program, but great story. Back after the break. Welcome back, folks. Adelaide's tech guy, Richard Pascoe, well known to all of us, is my, but things I didn't know about him. Sad story. His dad passed away when he was two. Mum had an alcohol problem, wouldn't give him any information about his father, which I would have thought would have left a gaping hole, but Richard seems to have reconciled that. We didn't ask about your mum's family, though.
No, my mum's family, she drove, I think, in World War II, she said she drove ambulances during that as a 16-year-old.
In England, during
the war. Dad was a bank manager for Lloyd's of London.
Did you ever meet your grandparents on your mum's side?
Yes, she decided there'd be better life for us in England. Oh. And, you know, so we took a ship back to England, was there for 6 months. I got sick and the doctor over there said he'd be better off back in Australia. So we came back to Australia again.
How old were you and what did you get sick from?
I was six or seven at the time. And for some reason, she said you got colds or the flu or whatever it is all the time, and the cold air was never good for you.
Come back to Australia. You glad you did?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So, all right, let's jump back to you've struggled through high school.
Yes.
Teachers not giving you any incentive, in fact, demotivating you, I would have thought. Was there any one teacher who did stimulate, motivate, inspire?
And a history teacher that I always got a word with called Kurt Lux, and we always had interesting discussions, you know, about, I was a great student of history, you know, which I still am. So, you know, he'd say, you know, look at the origins of World War One. Where did it come from? And you'd talk about the assassination. He'd go, no, you've got to go back probably 20, 30 years before that and do all your research to come up to that. Go ahead and do that. And come back. So, you know, we had some great discussions at the time.
So you get, after 2 years of year 12, you're leaving high school.
Yep.
Where do you go? What's the ambition?
I was going to say, after we passed, after the final exam, we went straight to the Larkspur Hotel. And because I was the oldest, I brought the beers for everybody at the time at the bar because it was... Back then, you could do that.
You were 18.
Yeah.
No, they weren't.
Exactly right.
Well, so, yes. Contributing to the moral decay of the youth on the Lefevre Peninsula.
So I was unemployed for probably 6 months because I didn't know what I wanted to do. Yeah. And then I got a job at Coles. Went for an interview and was storming at Coles at Norwood to start off with.
Storming at Coles. It's not gelling. Richard Pascoe, Tesco. A storming at Coles.
Yeah. And I worked my way up very quickly in there and you know, I went onto the floor because I employed another storeman. And you start to move up into what was then the Coles machine back then. And they offered you great retail training and great training for me was being able to communicate with people, different sort of people. And, you know, over the years, you know, we ran big staff and you'd learn to talk to 15-year-olds and, you know, senior people, you know, as you should to go along and say you've done the wrong thing, you've done the right thing, and you'd had senior managers in there who would correct you. I did a stint as night full manager at Ingle Farm, which was an exciting experience.
What's it called?
Night full manager. So when the shop closed, yeah, you'd have all these people come in and we'd fill the shelves and organise everything.
That's how that happens.
Yeah, it happens in all after hours. And, you know, I do tell, there's two horrific stories I'll tell of Coles. And I apologise, you might want to lawyer this up. When you're night full manager back then, and you went into Coles, you always remarked, but there was no flies or mosquitoes in the store. Mm. That's because every time, once a week, we had this big fumigation machine that we had to turn on for night fill. So we go outside, we'd turn this machine on, go outside, and it would gas the entire store with insecticide.
Does that still happen?
No, I don't think it still happens on there as well. So once it all done, we saw it run out. Then one of us had to go along, hold our breath, run back into the store, put the alarm on, and get out.
So the cost of fumigating, the cost of eliminating the bugs was the fumigation.
Fumigation at the time. And you tell people that, they think it's horrific at the time.
It probably does sound, but it sort of makes sense as long as there's no residual
exactly
aerosol.
Right. Yeah.
What did you, you were all a member of the union there, the shop.
No.
The assistance union by that stage. What did
no,
they
the
say
shop
about
is, no, no, they never reported it to the union. You wouldn't do that.
Well, you wouldn't?
No. Okay. It's a very, back then Coles management was very closed. You know, you worked long hours, didn't get paid for all the hours that you worked. It's been not like it is today. You know, I always remember we had one manager and official hours were from 8 till 6, let's say. If you didn't walk in the door at 6 o'clock in the morning, he wouldn't talk to you for a week.
So if you're due to on at 8 o'clock,
yep,
you had to be walking 2 hours earlier.
Had to be there 6 o'clock in the morning.
To start at 8 o'clock?
Yep.
I don't know.
It's a different time now, isn't it?
Well, it's, I guess you know, if you want a job badly enough, you do those sort
you
of things.
You do those things.
But you did work your way up to senior management, didn't you?
I did.
And then you had to have the unpleasant task of terminating people.
They employed 7 of us in the beginning. And what happens, we all had a section of Coles that we had to go along, and we'd go into a store and we'd say, in the Blackwood store, they can process so many items in a department per hour at this cost. And you go into another store and say, you're a dollar an hour more. How are we going to get your price down to match other people? And we trimmed $5 million off the state wage budget during that time. And if that meant we used to go along and go, the woman down the end of the counter who we're paying too much money to is a senior one, she's got to go. And we'd literally get her paid out there and then.
Did you have to deal with that person face to face?
Like they knew who we were. You know, you had the manager with you, so, you know, we take manager.
But you're sounding so impersonal about all of that.
Graham, I mean, Corns, you had to be at that time.
These are people's livelihoods.
I know. I was resoundingly hated for a year that I did this job. So,
but you don't appear to have any remorse.
I do. I've met people that I've sacked. And there was a time there was a manager who's no longer with us, Doug Whedon, and he was manager of Ranella at the time. Now, Doug had to go and have a knee replaced. And they had a security issue at the store. And the security guy said, we've got to sack 16 people in that day. And the security person went to see Doug in hospital. He said, get Richard down there. If anybody's going to sack him, he knows them all anyway. He can sack them. The day and I sacked 16 people in one day.
And went home and slept soundly?
Don't think I slept soundly. I thought, well, you feel bad for them. But literally, we call you in and we say, we've got some vision for you to see, Graham. And you look at and say, anything to say, Graham? And you go,
when you say vision.
Vision of them stealing.
Stealing stuff.
Stealing stuff at the time.
Oh, well, that's different.
Yeah.
That's different.
It was all theft. Okay. And then we say, and you'd say, no, I've got nothing to say. And so, can I have Graham's pay, please? And we give it, there you go, Graham. Leith will see you out of the building. So, yes.
No, well, that explains it. I'm thinking you're just sacking people randomly for no, just to save money.
They did. Over that year, we did as well. You know, I'd lost count of the amount of people that I let go. Apologies to everybody I did, by the way, say yes.
But you're not working at Coles anymore. How did that come to an end? What happened? Okay. How did your career
come to an end? In the end, they
sacked you.
They got rid of the other 6, and I did everybody's job for a year.
Okay.
Because the state manager said I did a good job at doing it. And then they offered a redundancy package, and that was the end of my Coles career.
So what are your expectations then? What are your prospects? What do you think you can do?
Retail of some sort. So I bought, it's now a bakery, it was the Aldinga General Store at the time. And
wow.
Picked it up for a very small price. And back then it was doing $2,500 a week, which is not enough to make money on it. By the time I sold it 5 years later, it was doing $35,000 a week.
What was the secret then? What did you do?
I don't think retail's that hard. I think, you know, good quality products, customer service, you know, is exceptional, and stock. Stock sells stock.
For the right stuff.
And the right stuff that you do, and being able to talk to people.
Richard Pascoe is my guest today. Now, we know him as Adelaide's tech guy. We're halfway through this interview. We haven't even looked at a computer yet. We haven't even talked about it. We're going to find out how he's morphed into this tech genius back after the break. Richard Pascoe is my guest in the studio. Richard Pascoe, Adelaide's tech guy. We know him. We listen to him and he helps us and we've got a problem. We ring and he solves it. So, but I've got no idea how it's morphed into this. He works at Coles and he works his way up through the system in Coles and eventually takes a redundancy package, buys the general store at Aldinga, does well at that. But what else is happening? How old are you then? Are you married by then? Have you got kids?
Married, but two kids by then.
Okay.
So yeah, boy and a girl then.
So you've just introduced these three new people into this narrative now.
Exactly,
so,
right.
So you better tell us a little bit about your wife and your kids.
My wife Cherie.
How did you meet?
Through Coles.
Was she a checkout chick?
She worked. What did she do? I've got to remember back. We're going back a few years now. So you did odd jobs around the shop, as a lot of people do on there. So and we've got a son, Marcus, who runs a bar in town at the moment. Which has got, and my daughter Missy as well.
Missy's very prolific on Twitter, isn't she?
She is.
And quite smart. So she's right into aerospace and all that.
She loves space and NASA and everything.
But she's had her challenges. We might talk about that a bit later if you want to do that. But I've got to get you into this new age of technology. You're running a general store down at Aldinga, or you own it, a general store at down Aldinga. When does this world of computers
That was in the days of Windows 3.1 and Windows 95, and I've always been good at explaining things. And now we get to the Coles days, people would say, "I need the video recorder installed," and Richard, can you see? Yeah, not a problem. I'll come around. I'll drop around after work and do that for you.
I say people get a new video recorder. Got no idea how to hook it up to
TV, and they'd do it. And I'd go around and do it for them.
Yeah.
So running your own business, in between there's some quiet times, gave me a time to go along and start to appreciate technology right back at the beginning. So Windows 95, Windows 3.1, and progress from there. And I remember I had a problem one time.
What about the Commodore?
No, I was never in the Commodore. I'd seen them and play with it very briefly, but it didn't do anything for me at the time. And, I had somebody come around because I couldn't solve a problem on Windows 95. And this bloke came to the house, supposed to be this expert, and he was scratching his head after 45 minutes. He was trying things. And then I leaned over and went, "I think we'll just do this." And he went, "Oh, I never thought of that." And I went, "That's okay, mate, thanks." And learnt probably then to start solving my own problems. So it gave me that confidence that I could go along and do these sort of things. And that's where learning started to really accelerate for me.
But people go to universities and colleges to learn. Do you know how to code and all that sort of stuff?
I've briefly looked at coding, but it doesn't. To me, I solve, and I say this to clients when I go out, I'm a problem solver. You do something wrong and on your device or something like that, and it's about going along and saying, "What have you done wrong? And this is how we're going to fix it." That's the way I've always looked at things. There's always a solution to every problem out there.
So, but do you understand how a computer works? I mean,
because
to me it's a complete mystery. We press buttons and things happen, but
There is you ask it to do something and it does it for you through the processing unit inside it and the operating system that it has.
So you're interested in computers and you obviously have an interest in certain programs. I guess that's from computers that you've bought and play with.
Bought and played. I've lost count of the amount of money I've spent on tech over the years, for it. So, always buying something new and the latest and greatest. And I think that's kind of like my job to do that for people, and especially for listeners and clients that I've got.
So what did you start off with? A
686 that I had built was running Windows 95.
You built it?
No, I had it built for me. So I've built computers over the years, but somebody built it for me who's supposed to be great at going along and doing this. And I learned it intricately, very, very quickly. And then you start going like, "Well, that's not good enough. I'm going to buy that machine now and we'll get rid of that one and start moving things on."
And how does that become a business for you?
People started recommending me and I created my first website, which was called Richard on Computers. And I started to put tips up there for people. And then I get calls from people going, Fred recommended you, said my IT guy, it was always my IT set guy says, I can't do this. If anybody in Adelaide knows that you can do it, it'll be Richard.
So in those early days, what was the most common issue?
It was always getting on the internet. You know, it was internet speed and it was emails. And emails are still the most common issue today.
Really?
Yes.
But how does, but say you build a website.
Yep.
And people slowly...
slowly migrated to it and you know, for that. And I thought, well, let's start to up that part of it. And, you know, this is after the Ordinga General Store, and I'm doing retail consulting at that time. So we established a buying group in Adelaide of convenience stores, delis and snack bars with two friends of mine, and we split all the jobs up. But part of my job was to do all the books and all the IT for the business. So it's kind of like I fell into that part, and the others had a role in the business that they did. But it for me, it was, you know, that part, and it gave me a chance to go along and develop my skills as well.
Did you predict, could you have predicted the explosion in computer capabilities and the digital world that we now see back then? Did you have some sense of how it would grow?
Everything progresses, and it progresses so well today. It's just amazing, you know, some of the things that we're seeing today out there. I mean, everything is you know, lightning fast. You know, you go back now and say, you know, if I took a computer today from today, took about 10 years ago, people would be stunned about how good it is today. I know we complain about things and we say it doesn't work.
I still complain. I still don't. I know it was sort of slowish back then, but I don't see any exponential massive increase at the moment.
If you go along and edit a video, edit audio, you know, and you went back 10 years ago, you know, it was more of a chore back 10 years ago than it is today. Things we can do in basically a few seconds today would take us a couple of hours, about 10 years ago.
What happened when you turned 50? You made a comment to me once that you turned into a different person once you turned 50. What happened?
Before I turned 50, when I reached 49, I went before my 50th, I was probably 18 kilos heavier than I am today.
Wow.
So I wore it quite well, I've got to say. But I made that determination that I was going to drop weight and become fit by the time I was 50. And, you know, I wanted a single thing, but, you know, I ate the best I've ever eaten in my life. You know, I was very, very careful about what I ate, exercised, did everything to go along and drop weight. And the weight just started to plummet off me. And it gave me probably a lot more confidence than I'd ever had before.
And that was simply diet?
Diet
and exercise.
Diet and exercise.
Diet's probably more important, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. It is. So, you know, it's changing all the, you know, the things that I used to eat.
Give us, what did you used to eat and what did you change to?
God, I loved hamburgers. Hamburgers and, you know, hamburgers and portion quantities as well.
Okay.
You know, for a bit, I cut back on quantities and the weight started to come off and I achieved my goal weight, which was 95 kilos, but, you know, basically around my 50th birthday. And, you know, before that, you know, I would never have come up and talked to you. You know, I'd put anybody in the media or anything like that. It was just, you know, I'd very
shy, good
in my own circle. But that was about it for me. People would come along and say, oh, look who's over there. And you say, oh, yeah, that's good. I'm not going over to say hello or anything. So, yeah.
Now, but you had a bad injury, didn't you? In your 40s, you had a really bad injury. Tell us about that.
I did. I was boogie boarding at Port Elliot at the time. So, and
as we do.
So, yeah. So it was like, I was having great fun at the day, but the waves were enormous on that day.
At Port Elliot.
So, wow. In Horseshoe Bay,
which is great down there.
But I got dumped, and I always remember it because literally the wave turned me upside down and I landed on my right shoulder. And I knew I was in trouble from the minute I'd done it. And literally I staggered out, and my shoulder was like out of the socket. For it, and I'm saying that, well, I've seen people do it on the telly, and I'm trying to crunch the thing back in as tears are rolling down my face. Got taken to the Victor Harbour Hospital, and they said, you've got real problems here with the arm. Then I got taken to Flinders, they had, you know, they x-rayed it and everything.
Is it still out of its socket at
this
time?
No, no, no. It was all back in. They said your shoulder is in pieces. You've snapped your arm clean through as well.
Oh, what?
For it. And then I was a week, I knew a surgeon at the time. So I made some phone calls and they got me into Wakefield Street Hospital. And I was in there for a week, you know, while I recovered, was heavily medicated at the time. But because it was in so many, literally in so many pieces, it was like a jigsaw puzzle. Yeah. They said, you've got to sit there. They couldn't pin it. And I had to sit there really drugged to my eyeballs for probably about 4 months.
Like while it healed?
While it healed.
Just had in the old school knitting it without plates or screws.
Yes. And I always remember the surgeon said, you'll never ever raise your arm above your head again.
How's it now? Can you do that? Oh, perfect.
It's perfect. Perfect. And I proved him wrong within a year. You know, he said, with that, it's never going to happen.
Richard Pascoe is my guest, folks. It's a great story. But how does he become this media tech guru? We'll find out when we come back after the break. Welcome back to Conversations. My guest today is the very affable, gregarious Richard Pascoe. We know him because he appears regularly on our programs. And everyone else's programs. But it's a really interesting story that somebody who worked at Coles and then went out and branched into his own small business with a general store down at Aldinga. But it's just through interest and a feel for it, he becomes an expert at solving people's problems with computers. Not necessarily how they're made or constructed, but he can solve problems. So there's a couple of questions here. Firstly, how do you become the omnipresent media personality that you've become? I'll ask that question first.
I had dinner with Amanda Blair and Monique Bowley. And
who used to work here?
Doing the afternoon shift. And went around the table and said, what do you do? And I said, well, you know, I'm a tech consultant. I can answer questions on Apple, Google, Microsoft, smartphones, tablets, TVs, anything you want. I reckon I can answer any listener's question. And Amanda went, great. Mons will ring you and we'll get you on the show. So I came in, did the show, the switchboard lit up and, you know, for it. And I thought, well, that's good. And I thought, that's the end of it. And I went and said, thanks very much, and walked out. But Ink went, so you'll be back in 2 weeks' time, which was nice. And it was a regular fortnightly segment.
Did you say how much?
which is good. But, you know, we had to pick a name before that. And over in America, there is Leo Laporte, the tech guy, and, you know, he's the same as me, but he does on a much bigger scale over in the United States. And I actually flew over there 4 years ago and met him, who was very, you know, very happy to meet me and thought it was great that I built this career up, you know, on it. And he does a radio segment on Saturdays for 3 hours and Sunday for 3 hours as well as another 11 podcasts that he does about technology. Wow. But so we came up with the name The Adelaide Tech Guy.
Did you have to involve him? Did you
no,
have to pay him?
Or
did,
no.
He was okay for
he
you?
He was all fine. You know, I said, I'm the Adelaide Tech, you know, he said, what's your business, Adelaide Tech Guy? And he goes, well, that's fine. That's great. You're in Australia and publicised me when I met him, because there was a podcast TV show then, and he said he is my equivalent in Australia. Very happy and affable, you know. Yeah. It was one of the great experiences of my life.
People have always got a question. The lines never go dead. What's the biggest issue? You said before in the previous break about emails, but I imagine there's a lot more things.
Oh, there is. You know, my smartphone doesn't work properly. I mean, the listeners, you know, absolutely love them. You know, all of them that ring me. You know, I've got a problem with the computer. It's just, they're all minor things to them. And, you know, a lot of time I'll say to people, ring me back afterwards, you know, and because sometimes it might be I need to go out and see them or talk about it. And, you know, I get calls all day long from, you know, from people and listeners. And part of the great thing, and I've always got to thank 5AA for putting me on. You know, next year's my 10th year on radio.
Is that right?
Doing this, which is just amazing, you know, for
but it. But I often wonder, how do you get a return from it? Do you get a return? I mean, you've got to make a living out of it.
I do. I charge you an hourly rate when I come out and see you.
You didn't charge me.
We did a contra, didn't we, Graham? So, yeah. You know, at the time. So, you know, and the 5AA progressed to other radio stations. And I always remember Power FM, which comes out of Murray Bridge, they rang me and said, you know, can you come on and do a segment? And and I went, I don't know if I can. So I came in and asked the program manager at the time. He said, I don't care what you do.
Because we're not, we don't pay you here. No. It's a voluntary service that you do, which probably complements your business.
And to me, I hope I give listeners great information.
Well, you do. I mean, just the issue I had with my computer about increasing the RAM memory. It was an old Apple
iMac
that would start to slow down, and everyone said, "No, you need a new computer." You said, "No, just boost the RAM," and it was. Very simple to do for $50 or $60.
Exactly right. So, you know, it's not about, there's lots of people out there who go along and say, you've got to spend X amount, $1,000. You know, and listeners, when they hear this, will know that I've gotten into you and said, I need a new computer. No, you don't. We'll just tidy it up a bit and it works fine. If you can get, you know, a few more years out of it, because money's tight at the moment. With COVID, we've got to understand money is very tight, and it's great that people want to go out and spend some money. But if we can save you some money as well, that's what I'm about.
I saw your comments about cheap cords. Now, the issue of charges and charging cords are an ongoing thing, because the Apple ones seem to break for whatever reason.
Treat them carefully, Graham.
I do that. But the best cords I've had have been the cheap ones that you don't seem to recommend them.
No, I don't, because cheap cords and cheap chargers on certain devices, especially Apple products, don't provide a constant level of power. So if the power supply goes up and down, that's where we get overheating and things, and that's why fires have been caused around the world.
So but those McDodo cords, they seem to be pretty good, the ones that they add for, you know, you can lift up big weights with them and they don't break. And
Some of them are all right. I'm not a big fan of the ones we buy from, let's say, certain malls around Adelaide, you know, for $1 or $2.
Okay,
They're the ones I'd probably avoid.
Righto. I follow your daughter, Missy, on Twitter.
Yes.
And she's an intriguing little character, isn't she? Well, she's not little anymore. She's grown up. Missy's had her challenges. Can you
She was diagnosed with a brain tumour at 5. We kept on getting calls from the school. She would go white and vomit. And we went and got... She had a scan. Turns out she had a tumour. We had an excellent neurosurgeon who operated on her, and then she had another one a year later, because they couldn't get it all in the first place. So she had the next one a year later. She's fine now. She's deaf as well. But, you know, that has impacted her life.
Was that because of the tumour?
Nobody can ever say.
But she wasn't deaf before.
She didn't talk that much. So, really? When you're 5 or 6, and, you know, you always get where people go along and say, oh, her brother's talking for her at the time.
Okay.
You know, so, you know, we found out she had a severe hearing loss. So she ended up going to the Cora Barclay Centre for Hearing Impaired Children, you know, for a while. And then both the kids went to Pulteney Grammar as well. But they had a good course there at the time to go along and help kids with challenges like Missy.
But you've been crook as well. You had a bad issue with your stomach.
I did. I came home one night from football park.
Watching Port Adelaide get beaten again.
Yeah, it was probably the sick of the time. And I wanted to vomit. And this, I hope you're not eating lunch while you're listening to this. And literally, I'm going towards the back door and I'm thinking, no, I'm not going to make it. And I projectile vomited all over the back door, and it was literally all blood.
Really?
And
what?
And, you know, and that kind of like shocks you.
Did you have a stomach ache? Did you have pain?
It was just like, I'm going to vomit. You know, literally, and there's blood all over the back door. Got into a specialist very quickly after that, and they put a tube down and had a look inside. And I always remember, I woke up and he came around and he said, that's the worst esophagus I've ever seen in my life. You've probably got cancer. I'm just going to see Mrs. Jones and we'll talk about it in a minute. You sit there with your mouth hanging open at the time and go,
Just like,
that's great. Turns out it wasn't. They put me on some drugs, and I had a thing called a Nissen fundoplication they did to my stomach, because the valve at the bottom of my esophagus into my stomach had become two-way. So all the acid was eating away my esophagus.
Ah, right.
And that's why. So the blood was constantly flowing down into my stomach. So they fashioned another valve out of part of my stomach to there, and I've been fine ever since. I've had a few hiatus hernias because of it. And I'm very careful about what I eat, because if I eat the wrong thing, I can't vomit.
How often do you vomit?
hopefully never, but yeah, you might want to, but yeah, you can't vomit. So yeah, you always got to be. I pick and choose about food that I eat.
It's an amazing world in which you inhabit in terms of this. It's a mystery to most of us. We couldn't have predicted the future, but tell us the equipment that you recommend at the moment for home computers and for kids, and where do you see it taking us in 10 years, 15 years' time?
It's everything's a connected device now. You know, we've got watches that talk to our phones, and I think, you know, and we've got health devices which sit on our wrist now, such as the Apple Watch, and you know, it's like when I exercise, I look at my heart rate. All of those, I think it's wonderful, some of the things that we've got. I think it's only going to improve. You know, when you can see that your blood oxygen level can be measured now from your watch, I think it's a staggering time that we live in now.
Is it accurate, though? How can it possibly measure your blood oxygen?
Because of the sensors on the back of the watch. I was in the New Calvary Hospital a few weeks ago for a lube and oil change, as I described it, on there as well. And, you know, because they knew who I was. One guy was very excited to meet me in there, one of the nurses, and we were just comparing heart rates and blood oxygen levels, and they were very accurate at the time.
So your watch was compared to the sophisticated machine you're
doing. Exactly. When they strap it on your finger, it's exactly the same. So it measures all the blood flow through the back of your wrist.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
For it. So, you know, it is a marvellous time that we live in. I think that part is only going to progress. I think we've got very good computers now. Anything that you buy now should do you for the next 10 years.
Are they good enough computers to negatively affect a presidential election?
That's a different story on there as well. So, you know, as far as we've got, there are farms out there with people, you know, they call them farms, of people going out there and trying to influence everything that we do now. And I think we have to be aware of the influence.
You're talking about Facebook, Twitter.
Yep.
Pumping out these false tweets and false Facebook posts.
Thousands of people trying to manipulate things. We have to be aware of it. And we have to be smarter on social media about what we read and what we believe in there as well.
How can we do that? How can we be smarter?
It's to me, it's always education, you know, for it. I mean, I don't talk about things that unless I can have more than one source for it. So, you know, we get the people who are against 5G. I mean, I've had hate mail sent to my house saying I'm going to be responsible for kids dying because I promote 5G. And I always say, but do your research when it comes to that. We know that 5G is no danger because it's non-ionizing radiation. And, you know, but people don't believe because some crackpot wrote it on a pretend website and publishes it as health material as well.
Those of us with primary school age kids, which I guess is the formative years for their embracing of social media and devices, can you give one specific word of advice, one word of advice which you think is critical to their development?
If you're a parent, you've got to have that relationship with your kids about social media. You have to understand what they're doing and the time that we live in. I see too many times where I have to go and see parents sometimes, and I have to be the parent to the kids because the kids have got in trouble as
well. By posting the wrong things.
Following the wrong things on there as well. So, you know, you've got to have some education about it, not go along and say, I'm not interested in it all, because that's how accidents happen. If you've got that relationship early in life about what your kids are doing online, that will continue. It's not to tell them off, because too many parents just want to tell them off and say it's all evil. It's not all evil. It's a wonderful platform out there. But we need to understand that platform. So it means it's a whole approach from you're a parent, a grandparent, to the kids. Start early with your kids and they will have a better experience and achieve less bullying.
Richard, it's been a great chat. It's a great journey. It's a great life, and it's a great space you fill there in our thirst for knowledge of technology when we have none. We have very limited ones, so you're providing a great service. Thanks for the chat. I'm sure we're going to hear you lots more on 5AA on the various programs we have, and indeed the other radio stations around the country. So thanks for coming in. Thanks for chatting, and thanks for being a great guy.
Thank you, Graham, for having me.
Richard Pascoe, folks, Adelaide's tech guy. Thank you for joining us.